You see, the thing is, I really don't know whether anybody's interested in this kind of thing or not, but I used to love to listen to people on the radio that just kind of freeform, kind of riffed, you know, talked about things that happened in their lives and told stories. And I did kind of that with Father's Heart, but Father's Heart was very scripted and very kind of, you know, okay, this is what I wrote in the book and this is the story I'm going to tell. And what I'd like to try to do here to see if anybody is interested at all is just kind of freeform it and talk about things. And today, for some reason, I just decided I wanted to talk about my days in radio. I went to my first radio job back in the 70s. I want to say 75, 76, back in that time period. I went to WDDY in Gloucester, Virginia. I'd been a Baltimore boy. I'd been living in Baltimore, Maryland my whole life. I went to broadcasting school there. And they got me a gig down in Virginia. The whole point of the broadcasting school was they promised, well, sort of promised, that if you did decently in the class, you would you'd get a gig. They had a placement service. And they sent me out with a bunch of guys. They sent me out with Hipley. They sent me out with Renahan and a couple of the other guys. They all got gigs. Geshen, I don't know if he got a gig or not. But a lot of these other guys, they got gigs. You know, Gesker, man, Gesker, he wound up working in public television, man. And then there was Smith. Smith was one of those guys that was so incredibly, stupidly handsome, square jaw and, you know, black hair, great build, that you just thought, this guy, he's going everywhere, right? You know, Smith never, I don't know, did he ever worked in broadcasting? The last I heard, he wound up doing the hippie thing, growing his hair long, and was putting roofs on houses out in L.A. somewhere. But anyway, they sent me out, and I mean, like, I barely graduated. I'm at the bottom of my graduation class. I think that the guy that ran the school, John Jeppy, he just kind of, like, took pity on me and went, you know, this guy with his really bad blue and white check sport jacket and pink ties and stuff. See, I'd never had a suit. I was like a pseudo wannabe hippie. And the Broadcasting Institute of Maryland insisted that you wear a tie and a jacket and tie in class, because in those days, back in the 70s, that's what broadcasters did. They wore ties and suits and they were all dressed up, you know, and on the air and stuff. So Jeppy insisted that we sit in this classroom in this reconverted Catholic school building or wherever the hell it was, and we wear jackets and ties. So I didn't have any of that stuff, man. So I literally went to a Goodwill store and found this awful blue and white check suit that someone had sent to the Goodwill store. It looked like the seats of a 64 Fairlane or something, and a bunch of old thrift store ties, and I had still had my long hippie hair down on my shoulders, and I went to class looking that way. That was my suit and tie, man. And so that's how I looked. That's how I looked. And John, I think Mr. Jeppy, he felt, okay, I gotta do something with this kid. So they sent me down to WDDY in Gloucester, Virginia, down in Tidewater, Virginia. Now, remember, this is my first trip away from home. This is my first trip. I'd never been away from home before. I'd never lived away from home. I was 1 year out of high school, went to broadcasting school for 1 year, got my certificate degree and my third class radio license. I got my ticket, as we called it. Even had to do algebraic equation to make it happen, and I managed to pass it. I think after like the third or fourth try, I got my ticket. So there I was. My dad drove me down Route 3 and 301 and down into Tidewater, Virginia, down near Route 17 and different places down there, and that'll come up later on. I think I'll do a little bit of a song I wrote about going down there, and that'll come up later on. So there I am, and he literally drops me off in front of the radio station. I go in and I meet my boss, a guy from Chicago? Yeah, Chicago. Anyway, the station was WDDY, and it was a 1,000-watt daytimer, broadcasting at 1,000 watts of power, but only from sunrise to sunsets, with daytime station. Yeah, daytimer. So I had to, I had to go in and meet all the people. I'll tell you about, yeah, daytime stations are weird. But I met Art Lazaro. He was my boss, and he was the owner of the station and the salesperson. And I was the morning guy, and I was also the afternoon guy. That's how this station was run. In the middle of the day, the broadcast guy, was also the engineer, a wonderful old fellow named Charlie Lawrence. I will tell you some stories about as we go along. Charlie was just a top-notch dude, man. And I, you know, he was the old man to me. And I remember I'm like 19, 20 years old. Charlie was the old man. He was like, God, he was ancient, man. Yeah, he was like less, he was not as old as I am now. But Charlie was an old Virginia boy, and he called me a shitbird. He called all of the announcers that came from the Broadcasting Institute of Maryland in Baltimore that came to WDDY shitbirds, because we were Orioles fans, and we broadcasted the Orioles games, even though we were a daytimer, so if it was a nighttime game, we couldn't broadcast it. And if we started the game like a doubleheader or something on a Saturday or Sunday, we'd have to cut the game off in the middle. But that was just, you know, what happened. And then people would be calling us up, screaming at us, what happened in the ball game and stuff. But anyway, Charlie was a piece of work. He was just an amazing old dude. Engineer, could fix anything. And he said to me, man, son, this radio station was poorly built the day that it was built. And they should have burned it down that day and salted the earth so nothing could ever grow here again, is what Charlie told me. And then he said, but welcome. You'll learn to love it here. With a very sardonic, you'll learn to love it. Anyway, so I met Lazaro, I met Charlie, and then Mr. Lazaro says, well, your pay is $400 a month, not $100 a week, $400 a month. And any long-distance phone calls come off your pay. Anything that you do, you know, here that costs money to the station, take it out of your pay. And here's the name of a lady that has a boarding house. And when I went and met Ms. Hopewell, who had become my landlady while I was at WDDY. And, of course, she was an old Southern lady, religious Southern lady. When I knocked on the door, you know, it's this perfect cliche of the moment. Ms. Hopewell was sitting there in the sitting room with her Bible in her lap, and knocked on the door, and I told her who I was, and one of the boys worked at the radio station, and Mr. Lazaro said she had a room for me, and she did, and she took me upstairs, and she showed me the room. It was a room. There was a sink in there, and nothing else, a bed, sink, a dresser. I think it might have had one time been one of her kids' rooms or something, and the bathroom was at the end of the hall, and of course, there was no drinking, no smoking, no women, no cooking, no anything allowed in the room except for sleeping and then maybe reading. And she saw I was carrying my guitar case with me at the time, and she said, and no loud music. She's like, oh, okay, well, you know, fine. I kind of basically stuck to that anyway. I didn't play much guitar in the room. There were other people that were living there, and I was a little too shy to display my stunning guitar playing skills at that moment. And so that was, you know, that was my introduction. And the next day, I got my first on-air day. I went to work, and I had to be in there at 3 o'clock in the morning. The station signed on sunup, whenever sunup was, it was 6, it was 5, it was 4:52, I had to be on the air by sunup, and I went in. I used to have to get in early and clear the wire, it was called. You had to clear the wire. You had to go into the AP wire machine, which was like this monstrosity of a endlessly running typewriter that just pounded out, you know, news and sports and features and you name it. And it all came flooding out of this machine on these incredibly smeared, smelly sheets of yellow paper, and it had a typewriter ribbon. And of course, every once in a while, the ribbon would run out. So one of the jobs you had to learn is how to change that ribbon. And I never got that right. I had to call Charlie every time I had to change a goddamn ribbon. Man, can't you learn this? No, I can't figure this. Anyway, you come in and you clear the wire. You clear the wire. You pull all the stuff that had been flowing overnight while the station had been off the air. You take and you rip it. You rip it and you separate it out, and you put the national news on one nail, the local news on the other nail, the sports on the other nail, the weather on this nail over here, and any features and anything that Art was interested in. And Art was a big Detroit boy. He was from Detroit. Any Detroit features, any Detroit Lions stuff, any Detroit Tigers baseball stuff, you know, that stuff better be saved, and he better find it when he came in the morning. And you know, so when he did his show in the morning, I think it came at 9 o'clock, Tidewater Travels with Woody. Everybody called Art Woody because he had this little show, Tidewater Travels with Woody. And so he came in, you know, and he would do his show and we'd play this theme song. You know, you're supposed to do it at 9 o'clock. Of course, he's the boss. So you can't know. You start the theme song at 9 o'clock and you know, you're wondering, when the hell is he going to show you? Because, you know, he comes running up the stairs whenever the hell he's ready, you know, and the theme song is going on and it was this old scratched up record that you knew if it got to a certain point, it wasn't going to work anymore. It just wasn't going to run. So, you know, you're waiting for Art to come in with us, you know, to do the thing. Anyway, so all the Detroit, so you come in, you sign on, whenever sign on is, whatever sun up is, you sign on, first thing you do is you hit news, national news. And we had ABC News. So you hit the ABC News sounder, you know, plugged in the cart. It was a cart, looked like a, if the thing would remind you the most of was an 8-track, you know, in the old days, like an 8-track tape. You put that in, you run the sounder, and the ABC News would start, and then you'd like listen because, you know, you have to, when they go out for the, you know, you're listening to ABC News, that's when you, that was your cue to play whatever local sponsor you had there and play, you know, whatever Farm Supply or Rexall Drugstore or, you know, Bill's Sheep Shearing or Jack's Automotive or, you know, Bubba's Hauling, whatever local bit you had there, you put that in there to make sure you covered up the national commercial. And then you ran the national commercial because that's how they paid. You know, we didn't pay anything for this news. We ran the national commercials and that's how the news was paid for. So anyway, you did that. And then once that was done, after 2-3 minutes or whatever it was, then you, the announcer, got to read the local news. And so that was like my first moment on WDDY in Gloucester, Virginia, you know, down there, my first live moment on the radio. And I wish there was an air check of it. I wish there was some way that you guys could hear how bad I was, because it was oh so bad. And I hesitate to admit that I had never asked anybody, I never questioned anybody how to pronounce the name of the town. So when I hit the local news sounder, when I hit the button for the local news and played a little, you know, local news, WDDY, local news from Gloucester, Virginia. Yep. First day on the air, first day in my new radio job, first moment in the spotlight. I mispronounced the name of the town that I was living in. And believe it or not, there's a little tiny station, local station. Everybody in town listened to the damn thing. And I think everybody in town called me to let me know and to let Charlie know and let anybody else who know, because Charlie was there, you know, he's the engineer. Let anybody else know that the idiot that's currently on the radio just mispronounced the name of our town. And I want you to know that this show is not going to be in any way, shape, or form in chronological order or sometimes make any sense at all, kind of unless you hear the whole thing in whole cloth, because I just don't think that way. We were talking about my first days in radio in Gloucester, Virginia. We mentioned some folks like Art Lazaro and Charlie Lawrence, and I talked about a great show called Tidewater Travels with Woody, and the boss, Art, would come up, and Art would do the show every day at 9 o'clock. He was the boss, you know, and he had this theme song that we played on a 45 RPM record. Now, you have to remember, this is back in the 70s, and we're playing this old scratched-up, beat-up record that actually, I'm not making this up, it had a crack in it. The record had a crack in it. So Art had to get up the steps in time to do the Tidewater Travels with show intro and do it before the needle on the turntable hit the crack in the record. And sometimes he cut it pretty close. By the way, I do know, somebody mentioned to me, I do know that I said that in the last podcast, Art came from Chicago and Detroit. Of course, he couldn't come from both places, but he came from Detroit. And like I said, this is free form, man. This is flowing off the top of my head. And I remember one time we're talking about this record that we like to, what's the word I'm looking for here? Those of us that worked on the air at WDDY, we weren't making any money. I mean, as I said, I made $400 a month. And even back in the 70s, 75, 76, 74, $400 a month was no money. It was no money. And I had to pay rent And at the time, I didn't have a car, but I had to pay rent and I had to pay for my long distance phone calls back to my girlfriend in Baltimore. And I had to eat. I mentioned in the first podcast that my room, my boarding house room at Ms. Hopewell's, had a sink in my room. And I would go out and I would buy some cans of Campbell's chicken noodle soup and some eggs. It was relatively cheap. And I would put them in the sink. And I would turn on the hot water and leave the stopper out just a little bit so the water would drain down. I'd put the soup and the eggs in the sink. And then I would come home and I would have sort of warm soup and sort of boiled eggs. And I did that a lot of days. And on payday, I would often buy a large pizza. There was a great pizza parlor in Gloucester at the time. It was called Anna's. It's a great pizza parlor, and I'll tell you some more Anna stories as we go along. I would buy a large pizza, and I would make myself only eat one piece a day until that pizza was gone. And let me tell you, it would get pretty gamey back in the day. By the last slice, it was pretty horrendous. But that was that's how I lived. That's how I survived, and that's how I managed to keep my weight down, whether I wanted to or not. But anyway. Talking about art and Tidewater Travels with the Annette Record and how we tortured each other. Well, Art Lazaro Jr., Art's son, worked there. He was a fun guy. There was another guy that worked there named Lou. Lou or Blue? I can't remember. Let's just call him Blue. Let's call him Blue. That's a good country name. He was there, myself. And now remember, we're young boys, radio announcers, wild as hell. And we could pick our own records up to a certain degree. There was stacks, these wooden shell was filled with 45 RPM records, and we could sort of select depending on whether we were doing the regular show, which was kind of like that middle of the road at the time music, middle of the road instrumental music, a lot of different artists that fell into that category, all whose names have gleefully left my mind and are not coming back at the moment. But most of them were produced by Mitch Miller. There was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And some guy named Lenny that played the organ and all of this stuff that was that kind of music. And then they had, again, I'm not making this up, for the youngsters, when they came home from school, there was the Woody Rock and Roll Dance Party. Yep. The rock and roll dance party that happened between 3 and 4, 4 and 5 in the afternoon. And whoever did that, and it was really great when it was old Charlie the engineer, well, they got to play the rock hits of the day, or at least the rock hits of the day that the record companies decided to ship into a 1,000 watt AM radio station down in Tidewater, Virginia. Our top 10 playlist didn't often match that one of the big boys. Also, there was a country show, of course, down in Virginia. There was a country music show, so there was a country music record. Now, we got a lot of country music records, and people could also come in and drop off their own records, and a lot of artists would drop around and drop off records. Plenty of stories to tell about that, too. But anyway, let's get back to Tidewater Travels and the boys and us acting foolish. Art would come in, and he would do his bit. And have to play that 45 so he could do his show, you know, so he could do. And it basically, Tidewater Travels was an information show about what was going on in town. He would just read all of the press releases we got about what was happening in town, flower shows and dog shows and daffodil shows. Gloucester County is the daffodil kingdom place in the U.S., and they had a big daffodil festival. So that was always a big part of it. What was happening in the library, high schools, all that stuff. So one morning, I'm up there doing my morning show, and Art was on his way in, and I could hear him rustling around downstairs and grumbling and clearing his throat and coming up the steps. Boom, these are big. Now, I didn't tell you, and I should have, that this station was located over top the Coca-Cola Bottling Company. Underneath of us was the Coca-Cola Bottling Company, and we had to be very careful when we had the microphone open certain times in the morning, because you could hear the trucks rumbling out, just loaded with Coca-Cola. So if you had the microphone on, you could hear all of that stuff going on downstairs. So Art comes up these big metal steps, clumping up. He comes up, and it's time for Tidewater Travels. And so I'm ready to go. I got his record queued up, and I got the needle sitting on. I got my finger. It's called slip queuing. You got the record running on the turntable, and you hold your finger on it, and the needle is just set right there, so as soon as you let go of that record, it starts. Boom, right there. So I've got my finger on the thing. I'm ready to go. Art walks to the door. I let go of the record so the theme song can start playing, And all of a sudden, Susie Quattro, and I don't know if you guys remember Susie Quattro, but she was a young rock and roll woman that played the bass, and she was just cool as hell and very, very sexy for the day. And she starts screaming, "This song is for all the 16-year-old girls out there," or something. Obviously, what had happened is someone had taken the real label off of the record, steamed it off, and glued it to another record. Instead of Art's jazzy little intro, I had Susie Quattro screaming at the top of her lungs to introduce the owner of the radio station doing his bit. Yeah, he wasn't real happy with me, and I tried to explain, I don't know what happened, this look at the record, and he doesn't want to know anything about it. He's running his finger across his neck going, "Cut, cut, cut." And so I shut it off, and he sits there like turning 27,000 shades of red, looking at me. And if looks could kill, we wouldn't be doing this show right now. And he got through Tidewater Travels, and somewhere or another, we sorted out all of the where the real record was. And we never did. Well, I kind of knew who did it. I know that it was Art Jr. that did it. Art Jr. was that kind of guy. I remember another Art Jr. story, and there are a lot of them, sitting there doing the news. Now, remember that the news came on paper. There were no computers. There was no digital stuff. I'm literally reading the news off of AP Wire copy. I've got it in my hand. I'm reading the local news. Art Jr. comes strolling through the door. Now, Art Jr., it's cold outside. It was winter, you know, December maybe, November at least, December probably, maybe even January. Winter, very cold, Tidewater, Virginia, damp, cold, probably a little snow outside. He comes walking in. He's wearing a fedora, as he was prone to do in those days, and he had a nice scarf, muffler wrapped around his neck, and that is all that he was wearing when he walked in the control room door. And he's puffing on a big cigar. He reaches over, and with his lighter that he had just lit his cigar with, he set my news copy on fire. I am literally on the air, and I'm holding a flaming piece of paper in my hand, looking at this fool who is smoking a cigar and standing there, bare-ass naked. Yeah. that was not maybe one of my finest broadcasting hours, but I just kind of like put the paper down, hit the sounder. I was ready to go with the next record, because the one thing I learned while I was in broadcasting school was always keep your turntables covered. That's what we said. Keep those turntables covered, because you never know what's going to happen. So you always got to have music ready to go, or something ready to go. Boom, I hit Sinatra singing something, probably that Summer Wind. And I got up from behind the control room booth there, got up from behind the table and tried to kill Art Lazaro Jr. But, you know, we were just boys having fun. I mean, it was just an amazing moment in time, and it stuck with me all these many years later. I mean, there's so many stories like that. I remember I was telling you about Blue. He was a big boy. He was a big, big boy, even back in those days. I was skinny in those days. I was tall, but skinny, maybe, I don't know, just about 6 feet. No, but I didn't weigh much. I didn't weigh much. If I weighed 150, 160, it was a lot. And he was a big fella. Now, he had literally the best radio voice I have ever heard. This guy had a voice. James Earl Jones sounds like a pipsqueak next to Blue. Man, he rumbled. It was just, I was jealous. But the thing is, he couldn't read. He could not read a lick. And so he would have a hard time doing the news. And oddly enough, in those days, I had a hard time with numbers. I had a hard time pronouncing numbers. I had a hard time doing the logs and stuff that required me to do mathematical equations. So we had a deal. Whenever I was around, and I tried to stay around a lot because he spelled me in the middays, I would do his news for him. So the boss couldn't get a handle on the fact that he really wasn't great at reading. And he would help me fudge my logs and do a lot of stuff about making sure the logs were in good shape. So if the FCC came in, it looked like we were actually logging our transmitter readings. And I told you about the fact that I had to get up really early because I was the morning person. The one thing I forgot to tell you is that I had to get in there early also to clear a wire, as I mentioned in the first broadcast. But I had to turn on the transmitter and warm it up, because now we're talking about vacuum tubes here. We're talking about tubes that had to be turned on and warmed up for a good 25, 30 minutes before I threw the switch to go to power, because otherwise tubes would blow up, especially if they were cold, because I also neglected to mention that the station was over top the Coca-Cola Bottling Company in beautiful downtown Gloucester, Virginia. But the transmitter sat in the middle of a cornfield about 5-6 miles away from the station. So on a cold day, especially on a cold day, woe be to the radio announcer that did not come in and warm up those filaments before he hit that switch to go on the air. Because if the tubes blew, you are in deep trouble, because they were expensive and hard to find even back in those days. So yeah, Blue, he helped me out in a lot of other ways. And one way that got me in serious trouble with him one day, and I'll tell you about that on another day. And I'm glad you guys are listening to radio. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I'm enjoying rolling through these days and talking about them. They were my formative years. They were the first days I left home, and they were great days and great fun. And I'm going to keep on telling these stories just because I love telling them. And yes, someone asked me, am I going to write them down? And yeah, I'm going to do a book about all of this stuff, and that'll be sort of coming around while I'm working on this. So stay tuned for all of that. There is a blog coming up as well about this stuff. And it's a time period. It's a history. It's a thing that just doesn't exist anymore. The local radio station run by basically an insane bunch of kids with their first job. It just doesn't happen anymore with all of this multicasting and simulcasting and satellite radio. You just don't have those little places, little niches anymore. And so I love telling the stories and talking about them, and I hope you like listening to them. Don't forget, if you like the show, please leave a review wherever you're hearing it. And I've got it on a lot more platforms now. Please leave a review, a 5-star review if you can. Don't forget, I still have my book, A Father's Heart, out, which is available at Amazon as a Kindle book, as a hard copy, and as a audiobook, which includes music. So I hope you go back, and I hope you listen to that, and I hope to see you on the next show. And this show is going to come around a lot, because I'm seeing this as an old-time radio show. So I'm going to do it as many days in a row as I can, because I feel like I'm on the radio, and this is radio, and I'm Ray Weaver. Thanks for listening.